Hiya, Wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boolu, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. The joyous and jubilant documentary Sally, the exclamation mark in that is deliberate, is a delightful and educational journey through the life and history of Sally Miller Gerhardt, a professor of speech theatre and women's studies, a fantasy writer, and most likely known as a lesbian feminist activist who helped transform the world for women and queer people alike. If, like me, you haven't truly heard the name Sally Gerhardt before, then you might know of her activist work alongside Harvey Milk, notably from a pointed interview where Sally joined Harvey to debate John Briggs about his noxious and harmful bill dubbed Proposition 6, or alternatively known as the Briggs Initiative, which, if passed, would have seen homosexuals from academic positions in public schools banned. This debate with Briggs is one of the pivotal points in Sally's life, which also includes her appearance in notable documentaries like Word Is Out, Stories of Some of Our Lives in 1977, and in Barbara Hammer's short film Super Dyke. What delights the most about Sally, the documentary, is that it meets the energy, vibrancy, and advocacy of Sally, the person, and acts as a celebration of activism, queer liberation, queer culture, feminism, and so much more. It is, quite simply, a rapturous delight to watch and spend time with. The film details Sally's life, featuring in-depth interviews with those she knew, loved, campaigned with, and built a community alongside. It also features some joyously funny and engaging interviews with Sally herself, recorded in the years before her passing. Sally is more than just a history lesson. It's a reminder that in a time of great societal upheaval and distress, one of the purest forms of resistance is laughter, community, and joy. They can't take that away from you. I was fortunate enough to talk with two of the co-directors of the film, Ondine Rary and Jörg Fockel, who, while they were in Sydney for the Mardi Gras Queer Screen Film Festival screening of the film, fellow co-director and producer Deborah Craig was unable to attend, but the sense of community and energy around the film and the following discussion carries her energy forward. This interview talks about how Deborah discovered Sally and why telling Sally's story on screen right now is so deeply important. Ondine and Jörg also talk about the importance of being able to screen a film like Sally in the world right now, and the importance of keeping queer activist history alive and relevant. Sally is a delight of a film, and you can see in person at the Mardi Gras Film Festival on Saturday the 15th of February 2025. This is a special community screening as well, where all tickets are just $12. You won't want to miss it, I promise you. However, if you are unable to attend the screening in person or live interstate, then Sally is also screening on demand later in the festival. For all ticketing details, including the on-demand section of the festival, visit queerscreen.org.au. Additionally, if you want to find out more about the work that we do here on The Curb, then please head over to thecurb.com.au. We are a completely independent and ad-free website that lives on the support of listeners and readers just like yourself. If you can and you have the means to support us, please visit patreon.com/thecurbau to support our work from as little as $1 a month. Right, from now, that is all from me. Here is going to be a clip from Sally the film, followed by my interview with Ondine and Jörg.
Having her behind the camera. Yeah. Have you noticed that?
Okay, yeah, absolutely.
Good. Look at this. Oh, she's on her knees. God, I haven't had a woman on her knees for me for a long time. I've never in my life been without lipstick ever since I was, 15 years old. You just do it, because if you're a good Southern girl, you want your lips to be pink.
Can I really take you on a bit of a tour? You're not going to fall out the back door?
Nope.
Okay, watch it. We're going up a little hill. Don't fall out on the hill. Hold on to each other's hands. We are encouraging relationships among women.
I really, really tried. And I just couldn't get up the interest in the penis.
Here we go, girls. Sorry, it's a rough ride.
It's easy to fight. I fought with men for a long time. Try having a baby, man. Just try it.
Yes, I'd love if you could start off by introducing yourselves and saying what your role is with the documentary Sally.
Fantastic. Yes. So I'm Ondine Rary, and I am the editor primarily. There are three of us who co-produced and basically co-directed the film. Our third musketeer is Deborah Craig, who couldn't be here, unfortunately. And this is my dear old friend, York Focalay.
I started out as a co-producer, and I think in the end, because it became very, very collaborative, although Deborah is clearly, you know, the number one person behind this, who discovered Sally, so to speak, at least for us, and who started this project in the end because of the fact that it became very collaborative, and we spent quite some time trying to find the structure of the piece, which actually, ironically, for a biography, turned out to be more challenging than we expected initially. I also ended up being one of the co-directors.
Yeah, I love the word discover, right? Because I've told a couple of people about this documentary, and I've said it's a documentary about Sally Gerhardt, and they're like, "Who's she?" And I'm like, "Well, you know that famous interview that you know took place with Harvey Milk? She's the person that was sitting next to him." And suddenly their eyes light up, or their ears, and they go, "Oh, her, right?" But as the documentary shows, she's kind of been hidden by history in a lot of ways. And that's a cruel shame. Can you talk about that discovery process and bringing her story to life on screen here?
So it was actually Deborah who accidentally stumbled across Sally while making a short film about lesbians and aging in the Bay Area. She heard about someone in their 80s who was living in the middle of the woods and was still cutting her own firewood with a chainsaw. And Deborah just hot-footed it up there. And at that point, she hadn't really made a lot of films. I was brought on as the editor of that project. And the first time I saw Sally on my video monitor, it was amazing. She just leapt off the screen, and I had no idea who she was. And I kind of Googled her, and it's like, oh my God, she did all this incredible stuff. And then as we continued to work on that short film, which was really a variety of characters, Sally really stood out as being pretty extraordinary. And so we began to think about making a feature.
And, you know, for a little bit of context, Ondine and I met each other over 30 years ago in film school in Munich in Germany. So we go way back, and then eventually found ourselves in New York at some point in the 1990s, and then both ended up on the West Coast. And Deborah, our third director, and I go back, I think, at least 12, 13 years. We're both on the board of a nonprofit in San Francisco, and we both worked on a short film compilation in 2009. So the three of us have quite a bit of history. I think I might have also been the one who actually brought Ondine and Deborah together when Deborah needed an editor for her short film. And I also saw an early cut of that film, and I had the same feeling that Ondine had. And I think many people, when they saw the short film, that while it's a really great short film and it won a bunch of awards, and one of the characters always just was so incredibly present and charming and everything, and that was Sally Gerhardt. So that's also how this idea came, that we were not the only ones who suggested to Deborah that to look into making a feature about this amazing woman, but I think because of the fact that we had already kind of been working with her on the short film, it was an easier decision for her, because I think Deborah was very reluctant to embark on this journey, because you know it was in the end it was a 6 or 7 year journey.
Yes.
To make this film.
And I imagine as well, like the sense of community that we get to see that Sally is building on screen. I'm hearing this sense of community with all of you together. What's it like to be able to work through that creative process together as a community, showing community on screen? That's got to be quite powerful.
Yes, thank you for making that point, because it was. And I think for me, it was the first time I was able to really work in that way. We both, you know, have worked in television, and it's a kind of a brutal industry, and I was actually, yeah, sort of thinking about getting out of it. But on this project, for the first time, I had complete creative freedom, which was glorious. But we also, what was it Deborah used to say? We were going to put a little disclaimer at the end of the film. No humans were harmed during the making of this film. And it's mostly true.
And not a given in this industry.
Not a given at all. And I think our first priority was always to take care of each other. And it was incredibly collaborative. I mean, we all have very, very different talents and skills, and they happen to be very, very complementary. So I really do, yeah, I think that was really in the spirit of Sally. And yeah, I'm really happy about that.
And you know, in the context of community, I think that kind of extends from the three of us. For Deborah, it was incredibly important to be really respectful with the women, mostly women and a few older men that are in the film that actually knew Sally and ended up being very supportive of the film. And Deborah actually has this amazing talent to bring these people together. And there was quite a bit of resistance in the beginning, surprisingly. You know, while a lot of women of Sally's generation or women who had been her student really wanted her to get the credit that she deserved for the changes that she co-created, they were also really protective of Sally. And this was not a shoe-in. Deborah had to work really, really hard to gain the trust of a lot of the women. And we were talking about this yesterday. There's one woman in particular who in the beginning did not want to be part of the film. She did not want to be interviewed. And I think she didn't even want to give Deborah access to Sally. And it took a while for Deborah to get to a point where that woman was not just willing to support the film by making these connections and introducing Deborah to other folks, but also she agreed to be in the film, and she is incredibly important for what we ended up with putting on the screen.
She's one of the main characters. She really does tie it all together. And just so, you know, one of the points that the film makes is that movements are made as much by people behind the scenes as the people out in front. And so this was a person who was incredibly shy and, you know, but this powerful person, and that quiet power comes across in that interview and really, you know, adds something to the film that's, yeah, really important.
I mean, that's the thing, right? When we build up a community, they become sacred. And so when we invite people to become part of the community, that in itself is it's an act of trust. And so having relative strangers coming along and saying, I'd like to tell this story, that's like, well, hang on, I don't know you. We've got to go through that trust building process. Was that something that you went through and experienced with the participants, the people who were talking? You've kind of talked about it a little bit there, but that process of trust building, how did that work with you all?
I think we did the opposite because we both come from reality television.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And York in particular is, you know, it's a producer. So there'd be something happening in Sally's life and, you know, something sad or potentially even tragic. And we're like, go get that. Go make sure you film that person doing that terrible thing and get your camera up real close to it. And she didn't like that at all. Deborah didn't like it at all. Oh no, what are we going to do? We're not going to have any story. We're not going to have any good footage. But I intuitively had a sense that what Deborah was doing was right and also perfect for this project. And I think that ended up being true. Her kindness and empathy and, you know, talent for community building. I mean, this couldn't be any further from reality television in that respect. And
yeah,
that felt good in the end. I think we learned something from
that. But you know what? Also, both Ondine and I, we were in the documentary department of the film school in Munich. And while it is true that, you know, I produced a bunch of reality television shows in the United States, some of which I'm embarrassed to have on my resume, but as a documentary filmmaker, I've always felt that it's a heavy burden to carry that responsibility to tell someone else's story. Because obviously, you know, it's documentary. Always, everybody always thinks documentary is just basically a reality one-on-one translated to the screen. And that is so not the case. We decide what we film. We decide what order we put it in. And that is a very powerful thing that can alter what somebody says or how somebody comes across entirely. So I do have to say, despite of our initial instinct always to get everything, especially, you know, the stuff that was more dramatic, because we are storytellers. We need a dramatic arc. We need things to talk about or things to show. I think that burden is something that all three of us were very much aware of. And on top of that, speaking of community again, the women that we interviewed and that knew Sally were also very much on top of us. We showed them cuts. They wanted to talk to us. We were summoned into in-person meetings where they wanted to talk to us and give us feedback.
About the way we spelled things.
Yes. Yeah. Women, is it women's studies? Is it women's studies? Is it, what was the third one? There's a multi, and depending on who you ask, it's a different way of doing it. So,
but that was a part of the trust, Billy. The fact that we showed up and talked about that apostrophe really made a difference for that person.
Oh, I mean, it's huge, right? And that's the thing as well, that it's, yes, it's trust, but it's also about meeting your subject or your story at the level that they're, and the energy that they're putting out. So Sally has a certain energy and a certain vibrancy that we get to see, not just through archive, but through the interviews that, that take place with her. And then we feel that energy through the people that she inspired or inspired her. And I'm feeling it through talking with you. And it's that energy of being reflected on screen. And that's kind of a rare thing, I think, in documentaries, because often, you know, if you're telling the life of a person, you're just going, they were born and then they died and this is what happened in between, right? But this is meeting her on what she put out into the world in a way that is really quite powerful. How important is that to be able to meet Sally's energy on that level and bring it together on screen?
Well, the amazing thing that happened was when Deborah showed up for that first interview, for that first film, Sally's a performer, right? She just kicked into gear and gave Deborah this incredible performance. Deborah kept trying to steer her back to sort of what the film was actually about, and Sally didn't want to talk about that at all. She wanted to talk about all kinds of other things. And lucky for us, because that that interview and the B-roll, if you can call it B-roll, it's really verite because she does so many kind of wacky things. Yeah, that footage was so important to this film. I'm not sure that the film would work without it. Mm. And you know, by the time we got back with a little bit of funding and the camera crew, her dementia had progressed. So we were very lucky. She covered also all the topics without Deborah asking. I got everything I needed to be able to piece her story together. Yeah. So that was all Sally. We take no credit for that. We just, you know, just for knowing that it was great footage and knowing that we needed to use it and hopefully using it in the best way possible.
But, you know, I don't think we actually had to try to match her anything, because I think this, or I hope that the same thing that happened in the short film when she was on screen happens in the feature film, that when you see her, she just does that herself. Yeah. I think, like, if anything, we were trying to just wrangle certain things in, and that includes her energy, not so much her energy maybe, but also the fact that she had so many facets and so many different things that she did. Because the people that know her primarily for being a teacher at FS State, the first out lesbian who did that, who got tenured. She was a feminist, she was a separatist, and she worked very closely with Harvey Milk the year before he died on defeating Proposition 6 in San Francisco, which would have kept homosexual teachers from teaching in public schools. But beyond that, she also wrote fantasy novels. She was very involved in animal rights. I think that became even more important when she was getting older. Nature was incredibly important to her. She had a background in theology. So that woman had such a broad range of backgrounds and things that she did that, if anything, I think the struggle was to just, how do we tell all this without getting lost in too many different threads? And, you know, the things I just mentioned, I think we did manage to get everything into the film, but we did have to cut down on a lot of things for the sake of not making this just like, you know, throwing everything on the wall and the audience just at some point lose interest because it's just too much.
I mean, that's the thing is like she was an advocate. Her work as an advocate is so strong. And this film, in a way, becomes a form of advocacy as well, not just for what she stood for, but also advocating, investigating and researching about queer history and lesbian rights and gay rights, and especially not just in America, but around the world. And I find her such a captivating person as an entry point into that and exploring that history. And the film never ever feels like a history lesson as well, right? It feels like, how awesome is it that this person existed and did all this stuff, right? And how exciting is it that she was out there exciting people for, you know, through religion, through teaching, all those things that you're saying, through her sci-fi work. And you capture all of that so beautifully, which is just, it's a gift, right? And I wonder if you can then talk about advocacy, like documentaries as a form of advocacy, and carrying on that here.
Well, I'll just start.
Yeah.
Because I felt a very personal connection to the material as someone who grew up in the period, the generation right afterwards, right? My parents were boomers. And I felt that I missed out on growing up with feminism, and especially feminism. And there was such a big backlash against it. I grew up in a home where feminism was a dirty word. And so it was very powerful for me to remind people, A, what happened, but also, you know, how important it was, how much we stand on the shoulders of what those folks were doing them, whether it was feminism or, you know, gay rights. It was a very short period of time. It just absolutely cracked things open in a way they'd never been cracked open before. And as much as, you know, people tried to sort of put that behind them and we forgot about it, it's just so important that I think that we remember. And when we started working on the film, it wasn't clear exactly how, you know, whether it had present relevance or not. And since then, all of these things have started happening, especially with gay rights, trans rights, gay and lesbian and trans rights in our country. And it's awful, but a lot of these battles now feel like they have to be fought all over again. So we're very proud to have this film out there at this particular moment. It just feels great to have Sally's voice and her energy out there at this, what feels to us like a I don't know what word to use, dark moment, very, very dispiriting moment. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
I mean, you basically, I think it's both reminding people, especially a younger generation, that sometimes I feel like there's a generation of younger queer folks, and now I sound like my own grandfather, but it's amazing how people do forget history. Anything that has happened more than 10 or 20 years ago might as well be, you know, the Spanish flu or something, or World War I. It is ancient history for a lot of folks, and they don't realize that the realities they have now, the rights and privileges they have now, you know, equal marriage rights in the United States, that is something that was hard fought for not too long ago. Homosexuality was criminalized in many countries in the world, still is. So I think, unfortunately, we have to remind, and maybe that's just what happens with history, right? If you haven't experienced it yourself, then you just tend to not connect with it. I work a lot, and as an example, I work a lot around HIV and AIDS. A lot of my work is with nonprofits around HIV and AIDS. And I realize that as I get older, that the memory of how hard those years were in the 1980s and the early 90s, before there was a treatment, that is slipping away from us, just like the memories of these women that were the part of feminism or the first gay rights movements. And I mean, let's face it, Harvey Milk wasn't the first one, but the very powerful one in the 1970s. So I think it is important for us as filmmakers to remind people, especially generations after us, that this happened and that this, that where they are now came from somewhere, and that it can be just as easily taken away from them. And at the same time, we also hope, because of the fact that Sally is just a, such a fun person, and the way she debated people is so fun, that we can inspire people to do the same. Because we are going through a time, I don't think either one of us anticipated that it was going to get this hard. The things we've been seeing taken away from us, Roe versus Wade in the United States was turned around. We thought that was never happen.
Yeah.
And now there is on the Supreme Court in the United States, we have judges who are openly discussing whether equal marriage rights should really continue or whether they should also reverse that. So anything we have right now can be taken away from us. We need to be aware of that. We need to continue fighting, unfortunately, and hopefully Sally can inspire people. You don't have to be bitter. You don't have to be angry. You can do things and change the world, probably more so.
With a sense of humor.
Yeah.
And having a lot of fun.
And listening to people.
And through relationships, you know.
Sally, is like, Sally, there's this anecdote that you can probably tell better about Briggs, and she was in some meeting or some rally where they were talking about Senator Briggs, who is the one who sponsored Proposition 6 that would have banned teachers from teaching in public schools. And she said, you know what, I would do if Senator Briggs were here? And the crowd is roaring and is basically like saying, like, punch him in the face and kick him out. And Sally said, I would plant a big kiss on his lips. And that was kind of her attitude to a lot of people who disagreed with her. She was friends with a very conservative Republican woman in Willits, the small community in Northern California where she lived. And that woman is in the film. She talks about how meaningful it was to her to have this friendship with Sally, who was the opposite of her own political convictions. But she felt that they could really have these conversations that in the United States, we're not having anymore.
And in a way, I think that was the most important message of the film for us, was the importance of communication. And mm-hmm. and talking to people on the other side of the aisle, and how to do that, and something that's become very difficult in the United States. She was so good at it.
Yeah.
But we're talking about communication and listening and things like that. And one of the best ways of doing that is through literature. And of course, there's the Wonder Ground, which is so beautifully realized through Sally's own narration, but also the animation. And the possibilities of fiction as well, of showing a possible future, a hopeful future, is so wonderfully realized. Can you talk about the process of representing the Wonder Ground on screen and having a book like that to be able to refer to as well, what the importance of that is?
Ooh. It's been a long journey. That was hard. That was probably one of the hardest things about making the film. Do you include the book?
Mm-hmm.
How do you recreate it? And
Deborah and Ondine wanted to create 1970s recreations with actors.
Well, yeah, we wanted to like get a cave and get all of our friends naked and go in and do something really campy. Deborah and I share sort of a campy sense of humor. Luckily, we have York.
I put a wet towel on everything.
No, I don't think so.
So, yeah. And then finding the right animation style. And also, how do you animate flying psychic lesbians? I mean, that took us years to figure out what would they look like. Yeah. You know, it was quite, yeah.
At the same time, it seemed important to show this. A, it was one of the facets of Sally that was important. B, a lot of women we talked to said that the book was profoundly influential, including some of the gay men that we interviewed said it was very important to them. And most importantly, we had the fleeting suspicion that some of the characters in the book were actually based on Sally. I don't think we ever got that confirmed, but nobody ever said that, you know, that's absolutely not the case. But we felt that that just added another layer to Sally's story and to her own life, to show how, you know, the book is basic. And I think she says this in the film, that the book when she created the women's community in Willits, California, up north, that it was in some way her creating what she had previously envisioned in this novel. So there is definitely some characters that this, like one older woman in the book, shares with Sally. And that's why we took the liberty of, you know, showing them parallel and having, obviously having Sally read that in her own voice added to that.
And then one of the, well, I also wanted to add that someone said at some point that Sally's greatest gift to us was imagination. And I think that the book makes that point really beautifully. It's also, you know, kind of a controversial point in the film. Like, how much was her life like the book? And some people will say so much like it. And other people say, not at all. It was nothing like it. And so that there was some tension there that was fun to work with in the film as well. Also, from the very beginning, Deborah, I think it was her idea first, again, our co-director and sort of front woman, she loved the idea of animating little animals and having them enter into the actual footage, you know, and sit on Sally's shoulder or, you know, something like that. You know, it's a mad scramble to finish a film usually, but somehow we managed at the very end to get one bluebird. Is it bluebird? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That flies into the frame and you know, lands on a windowsill. And we were at a screening recently and this young queer person said that it made him burst into tears. Mm. And I thought that was so odd that, I mean, it's such a little thing, but it represents so much about how real life and imagination are intertwined and hope and yeah, just all of those things.
That's so beautiful. That is really beautiful. And it is an emotional moment in the film. Like it's such a beautiful film as well. And because it's so beautiful and because it's so light and, you know, Sally's just a joy to spend time with, those moments hit a little bit harder because we've been able to have those joys. Moments, you know, those moments of joy of you know, getting to experience the everything that's gone through. Oh gosh, I have so much praise and love for this film. I just absolutely really enjoyed spending time with it.
Far away, but I remember that we were towards the end of the film when we really wanted to have this one, like at least one animal that would be animated in the animated sequences, but it would also appear in the actual footage. At some point it was cats. We were focusing on cats because, you know, there were always cats in Sally's lives, it seemed. And we landed on the bluebird for A, because there, I think that, no, the main reason was because we were actually at an editing session. We repeatedly met the three of us in person, came together. You know, we don't all live in the same part of California. So we came together in one of our locations and looked at footage and now try to figure out how to edit the film. And we came into this house that we had basically gotten from neighbors of Ondine, and there was an image of a bluebird on the wall. And then we went
to dinner and the man sitting in front of us had a shirt with bluebirds all over it.
And then the next morning we looked out the window and there's a bluebird sitting right outside our window. I mean, the fact that we remember it now, we talked about it at the time. It was like something was telling us, this is, if you want an animal in the film that represents the spirit of what's going on, this is the animal. It was actually, I've never seen anything. Maybe we were just more aware of it because we were looking for it. I don't know. You know how the human psyche works in like weird ways, but it felt to us like, okay, this has got to be the bluebird. So the bluebird appears in the film repeatedly, and it kind of, one of the last images that you're left with is that bluebird, and it kind of makes it from the animation into the real world.
No, that's really beautiful. I don't think it's a confirmation bias thing at all. I think sometimes these things are there for a reason. They appear for a reason. And I think that that's the case with the bluebird. You're in Sydney now for Queer Screen. What does it mean to be able to screen the film at a festival that is all about queer film and being there, be able to talk to people in person as well? What does that mean for you both?
First of all, okay, there's multiple layers to this, I think, for me. The film has shown, it premiered at Frameline in San Francisco last year. So we've had quite a few screenings, including screenings in Europe. This is our first screening here. So that makes it special right there. And with that, for me, comes the question, how are people going to respond to it? We know that even people in the United States who haven't heard of Sally, They certainly know, or most of them know, who Harvey Milk was. And they certainly have some kind of connection, at least the people that come to the screenings, to the LGBTQ movement in the United States. So there is some connection there. I am really curious to sit in an audience, and for me this will be the first time, where the audience probably has like the no clue who this woman was whatsoever and doesn't even have like a historical direct connection to her. We've had multiple screenings in Europe. We won an award in I think in Geneva. I can't remember. So that was great. Clearly, people are connecting with the film that are not American, but we have not been able to sit in that audience. So although we've seen the film, probably I've seen the apart from the editing process where we saw it like 250 times, but I think with an audience, I may have seen it 10 or 12 times at this point. And it feels new every time. And I think this time is going to be very, very special because it's an audience where I'm just, do they laugh at the same things that people laugh in the United States? Do they get emotional at the same moments? You know, it's like the power of cinema, regardless of whether you know that person or not, going to be strong enough to do that? Or is there going to be a completely different reaction? So that to me is really, really thrilling. And, you know, completely unrelated to the film, we fell in love with Sydney. And I'm not just saying that because, you know, you're always supposed to say that. We landed here. We spent the first 12 hours walking around Sydney, walking to the ocean, walking to the opera house. We took pictures and we both looked at each other at the end of the day and said, if this was 12 hours and we had to turn around tonight and go home, we would be completely happy. This place feels very special to me because it's at the same time it feels familiar because there are certain European influences that you can clearly feel here. And at the same time, there's enough new and exciting stuff. The ibises, you should see me with the ibises. I lose my stuff every time I see them. Today we saw the dragon, the water dragons by the water. I used to work in animal television shows, so I get really excited about those things. So for me, this has a very particular special meaning and weight.
And I think, actually, so I spent most of the last 6 years in a dark room by myself, right?
Editing. You want to be
editing.
Just to be clear.
For me, it's been such an emotional journey. First of all, it was a fearful one where I was like, oh no, what if they don't like it? And those first few screenings were very tense for me. But I think what I've learned from this experience is how much this film brings us all together internationally, which is deeply moving to me. We were at an event for this film festival last week, and I guess an EU commissioner gave a speech and it made
yesterday?
Yesterday, was it yesterday?
Yeah.
God. Anyway, this wonderful person gave a speech about how important, you know, these films are at this time. And it was so good to hear that as an American who's really struggling right now with what's happening in the United States. It was so beautiful to feel that there's an international community out there that's going to help hold us up, you know, during this time. And then there's just a feeling of being a very humble feeling of I can't believe we get to do this. Mm. Wow. Like what an honor and all of those things. It's, what a gift to us.
Thanks again for listening to this interview with Ondé Nyorg as they talk about their film Sally, which screens at the Mardi Gras Queer Screen Film Festival on 15th of February 2025. Tickets are available via queerscreen.org.au. Check out other interviews, including other filmmakers from the film festival, via thecurb.com.au. I'll see you in the next one.